Hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Review of the Year special for 2015.
Way!
2015. Where the hell did that go? Anyway, it was a good year. It was a very good year. Lots of stuff came out. Lots of records were broken. We had a new Star Wars film. With all sorts of things. And here to help me discuss over the next hour or so 2015 and all the cinematic glory are the man who was the star of the biggest film of 2015, Asterix, Until the Force Awakens comes out, Edmund himself from Jurassic World, Nick Desemlian.
Edmund is here.
Oh my God, I can't believe we got him. It's amazing.
I know, he was hanging around outside. Just on the off chance we might do a podcast.
Am I getting paid now or afterwards?
We'll discuss it afterwards, okay. It's fine.
Right. Do you want to get paid?
Okay.
Get real paid. Next up is our art house guru, Phil Desemlian. How are you, sir?
Hey, very good, thank you.
So, and then last but not least is our geek queen, Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Fantastic, excellent, good to hear. And that's it for our Review of the Year special.
Bye.
Nick was obviously in Jurassic World.
Barely.
Phil and Helen, what film of this year would you like to have been in?
I was kind of in a film, in the sense that I was on the set of Testament of Youth and I walked into frame on one of the shots. So there's me, I'm definitely in it. But the only other person in the frame was Alicia Vikander. They probably picked up on it quite quickly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you done that? Have you guys done that before?
Walked into frame? No, yeah, that's massively.
In fairness, I was ushered into frame.
Yeah.
To do a surreptitious interview, which happened to be in the sort of medium shot
on the on a set visit in Dublin on the Jackie Chan classic Highbinders in 2001.
I think we all remember that.
I sat in a chair. And then watched with mounting horror as the camera slowly turned around to follow Jackie Chan and Lee Evans as he walked out of the room. And lo and behold, there's Muggins here right in the frame sitting going, hello,
bangly bang.
Yeah, yeah, that wasn't great. You don't want to fuck up a Jackie Chan shot, do you really?
Not if it's a slow motion and technologically advanced. We're trying this for the first time. It should work. We spent 6 weeks preparing it.
Who the hell is that?
We only have one shot of this, guys.
He broke four bones in the attempt as well, which really got
him. All right, okay, so normally...
And the film I would have liked...
Oh, sorry, Helen, I thought we'd...
Unbelievable.
I would say Avengers, but that's way too obvious, so I'm going to say The Martian, because I'd quite like to go into space.
Okay, you realise they didn't actually go into space, right?
No, they did.
Okay, over the next hour or so, we're going to be discussing our films of the year... And our moments of the year, and our characters of the year, and all that jazz. But let's start off with talking about the year itself. Where do we place 2015 in the pantheon?
Between 2016 and 2014.
Oh,
Phil,
yeah.
You're astoundingly literal as always. But how do you rate this year? Was it a good year? Was it another Russell Crowe Ridley Scott film? What was it?
Robin Hood. I feel it was pretty solid, actually. I think it had some moments of absolute brilliance and, as always, some big films that we hoped for lots from and they kind of underperformed. And then the ones that massively over-delivered. I, for one, had no excitement whatsoever about Mad Max. And then the trailer came out and I thought, oh, actually, this looks pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then the film came out and I was like, whoa, that was amazing. I didn't see that one coming even remotely. So I think it's been a year of some surprises and some very unsurprising successes like, you know, Star Wars.
For me, it's a year with two nailed-on five-star classics, Mad Max and Whiplash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think after that, I was putting my top 10 list together, and after that, you start getting into kind of, oh, it could be this, it could be that. Mm. Actually, Inside Out, which the first time I saw it didn't make too much of an impact, and then I saw it again on a plane a couple of weeks ago. It destroyed me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think suddenly I'm reappraising that. And thinking that's one of the year's best.
That was my film of the year. I thought that was just stunningly intelligent storytelling and brilliant layering of theme and character and plot. Just brilliantly done.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the stuff that I like in there, but I think those are the only ones which I can see myself watching over and over again.
I think it was a pretty solid year. It felt for a while like it was going to be a bit humdrum, but then Mad Max came along and blew us all away.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Sicario, which was... pretty excellent. I agree with Nick, the early part of the year, the Oscar stuff, there was some good things there. Birdman seemed to end up polarizing people, as did Foxcatcher. I like both those films to an extent. Whiplash, I thought, was the best of those. Economical and punchy, and it didn't hang around longer than it needed to, which is something that a lot of films these days seem to do.
You mean so, it kept its tempo up?
Oh,
easy to drum up enthusiasm.
Yeah,
no, that didn't work.
Are you Russian or a dragon?
Am I Russian or a dragon?
So that's the famous quote from the
yes,
film.
Yes, it right? is. You're right. And then, yeah, Inside Out, I thought was an absolute classic. I thought it was, if anything, potentially Pixar's best film.
Ooh, bloody hell!
I think that's fair.
I think once you got into the summer things, I mean, they're always most summer big summer movies tend to disappoint, don't they? Most of them are not what you want them to be. Was this summer better or worse in those terms?
I felt like it was a little bit better because Mad Max got us all off on such a big high to begin with. The Avengers, I think expectations were so high after the first one that it slightly disappointed people, but it is still, by any measure, a really good film. I think we weren't expecting anything of Ant-Man, and it was much better than we feared. And I think something like Mission Impossible Rogue Nation was significantly better than I think we'd kind of seen
coming. I thought this year was a fantastic year for spy movies. You know,
there were so many of them.
You could throw a rock and you'd hit a man in a creepy raincoat shuffling around a bridge somewhere. It felt like that. So it started off with what for me was one of the great surprises of the year. The utterly, absolutely insane Kingsman, The Secret Service, which I know, because of certain reasons, certain end shots, literally end shots, might have got, you know, some people's blood up in this booth.
Yep.
But I just loved most of it. The last shot is pretty unforgivable. But I know what they were trying to do. And you could argue that they tried, they succeeded. But anyway, but the church scene, I just, that made me, that was fantastic. And the scene with the exploding heads, I think made me laugh harder than anything I've seen this year. just extraordinary. And then we had Mission Impossible, which I thought was great. Spy, I thought was very, very funny. Bond, I think it was an okay Bond, not a great Bond. Bridge of Spies was solid.
Bridge of Spies I really liked, actually. And I think it's a really subtle film that I really look forward to seeing again. Mm. And probably again, because, you know, Spielberg fangirl over here. And Man from U.N.C.L.E., I actually really liked the zippiness of it. I think it just suffered because it felt like a prequel to itself. So it never felt like it got where it was going. It was all set up and very little payoff.
I was profoundly bored by that film. For me, that was a GQ magazine. There was that bit at the end of GQ where it's just guys standing around in nice suits and you flick through those pages. That was that for me for 2 hours or whatever it was. It was awful.
Was it maybe a bad year for comedy? Because there weren't a lot of comedy breakout hits this year, it feels like to me.
No. There were some decent comedies, I thought.
Yeah.
And some comedies that weren't, like Me and Earl and The Dying Girl, which is funny but also very moving. And Trainwreck, I thought, I enjoyed an awful lot.
Yeah.
I probably laughed the most almost in Star Wars, if anything, which kind of surprised me. It made me laugh a lot, especially when BB-8 starts giving people the middle...
The middle thumbs up,
yeah. It had a lot of funny moments for me, but no, it didn't feel like a classic year for comedy. SpongeBob SquarePants accepted.
Terrifying. That's one of the horror movies of the year for me. That thing was so disturbing. I just didn't understand that at all.
It's hilarious.
More Hasselhoff.
I haven't seen the film yet, but Nick keeps showing me there's a sequence in SpongeBob where Matt Berry turns up voicing an ancient dolphin. That his job is to oversee the planets to make sure that Saturn and Jupiter don't smash into each other, and it's just Matt Berry on Matt Berry form, and it made me laugh a lot. And Nick said to me, the entire movie's like this, so I'm going to check it out at some point.
That's the best bit.
It's not as good as the first one. I'll caution you.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It kind of turns into the Avengers for the last half hour. It's live action. It's very strange.
It's so disturbing. It's so weird. I didn't understand what was happening. I felt discombobulated.
It made me feel funny too. But yeah. Antonio Banderas as Burger Beard, I don't think has had enough plaudits. But talking of comedy, I don't think anything has made me laugh as much this year as when Chris and I went to see Big Game. Not entirely deliberate comedy, but I recommend if you're going to watch something on like a Friday night after a couple of drinks,
Yeah.
Big Game is astonishing.
You're right. I think you're referring specifically. We said we wouldn't talk about deaths on Deaths of the Year, as in character deaths, because, you know, A, gives away spoilers, and B, it's a bit of a downer. But Big Game for me has the funniest death I've seen in a long, long time. And I really hope it's intentional. I really do.
I don't think it is.
You don't think it is. I think it is. But you don't think it is. You'll know it if you see it. It's ludicrous in the extreme. Otherwise, I thought the film was pretty poor.
But we can talk about the scene where Samuel L. Jackson, he's playing the President of the United States. He teams up with this small kind of shepherd boy.
Yeah.
He doesn't speak much English. And to motivate, he does this motivational speech about the time he pissed himself before delivering a major address to the Senate. And I don't think that's being played for laughs either. It's an astonishing sequence. I reckon that will be on YouTube. So.
Actually, you know what? I did really enjoy that film. I've also realised that, at least in the UK, John Wick is a 2015 release. So, John Wick, man. That was one of the funniest films I saw this year.
Did it make you laugh? Because if so,
I genuinely did.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes at people dying horribly, which, you know, was always hilarious. But also just generally, you know, Keanu giving that incredibly deadpan performance in the middle of this ultra violence, I just thought was delightful.
Let's point it out very, very quickly, obviously, for people who are listening to this, because we do have a few listeners across the world. And this is 2015 UK releases, which is why we've talked about Birdman and The Theory of Everything and films that came out in the States last year. And obviously John Wick was a US release last year, but finally...
It's also why we won't be talking about The Hateful Eight.
Yes.
And so on, which are January
Revenant,
releases here.
Joy. All the big Oscar-baity films. Spotlight, even, is a January release, 2016, for us over here.
It felt like a year which was start where the Bechdel test was starting to be passed a bit more than normal. And also a really showcase of a lot of really, really good young actors and actresses. Especially actresses, I thought there were some really fantastic performances. Alicia Vikander is incredibly talented.
She was in every single movie made this
year. She was, well, so by law of averages, she was going to be outstanding in a few of them, but she was outstanding in all the films she was in. Ex Machina, I thought she was phenomenal in. And Belle Powley was a new name to me, I have to say, coming to this year. Yes. A Royal Night Out, followed by Diary of a Teenage Girl. She shows she's got incredible talent as well.
Yeah. She steals the former, but she absolutely owns the latter. And that is a film that I don't think a lot of people have seen necessarily, because it was quite a small film. It didn't get a huge release. But Diary of a Teenage Girl, is it out now on DVD? It was about to come out on DVD.
It's
really
about to come out.
Be ready. Look out for that. It's an absolutely fantastic film. Don't watch it with your mum. Quite a lot of sex scenes. But definitely
or your mum's
film that's
boyfriend.
Or your mum. Yeah, don't. That's a whole other... problem. But no, it was a great year for women. And I think, you know, people had talked about it in advance because there was Suffragette coming out, and that was a handy kind of hook to hang it all on. But Suffragette itself was, I thought, a bit of a disappointment.
It was, yeah.
It was kind of the suffrage movement 101. It was very, very kind of basic storytelling. I mean, good performances, as you would expect from that cast, but it just felt a little bit telegraphed the whole way through. But that didn't really matter in the end, because we had films like Carol came out, which is an absolutely stunning sang film. Mad Max turned out to have a female lead, which, you know, they kept very much under their hats. Inside Out, Brooklyn, you know, there were great, great roles for women this year. It was being talked about as a problem that there weren't enough, which is in itself, you know, a move forward and a kind of improvement on what we've had before. And I feel like the fact that it's even in the conversation now, and the fact that Hollywood is coming under pressure to hire more women, to offer more opportunities, is a really big step forward.
And I thought Fast and Furious 7 did a great job of highlighting all the female posteriors that are out there.
Film got a big pass on that one.
It genuinely does for me, because I would rather have that sort of out in the open nonsense than the kind of more insidious sexism that you see elsewhere. I you know, nobody takes Fast and Furious seriously on any level. And if it's the
I think
only
Vin Diesel
if it was,
does.
Well, yeah. I apologise. That is correct. Apart from Vin Diesel.
Nobody's explained the joke to Vin Diesel yet. bless him. I totally agree. Furiosa for me was amazing, one of the characters of the year. I'm a bit disappointed, I have to say, that Charlize Theron does not seem to be in the Oscar running. And I know that may sound ludicrous to people's ears, but I'm sick to the back teeth of worthy performances.
Yeah.
And I'm sick to the back teeth of being told that a film is only eligible for an Oscar if it gets released in November or December. And I love the fact that Mad Max is actually seems to be a legitimate contender for the Best Picture Oscar and George Miller for Best Director. But I think that she owns that film in a way that I don't think I've seen a female lead do for a long time, not since I think Sigourney Weaver with Aliens. And it's not just a Sarah Connor ripoff, or it's not just a, you know, she's rounded and she has soft edges, and as well as the hard ruffled stuff. And I thought it was tremendous.
I would 100% agree with that, and I would 100% agree that Mad Max is very much in the running for the big two.
Yes.
The one point I'd make about Best Actress is that as a result of all these great roles, I think for the first time in years, that is the most competitive acting category at the Oscars this year.
It is competitive, yeah.
I mean, there's been a huge controversy actually among critics about Carol, because the tendency is obviously always to push your bigger star for Best Actor Actress and to push your slightly less well-known star for Supporting Actor Actress. But really, it's actually Rooney Mara's film. So there's been pressure on them to put those to both forward for Best Actress, even if it risks splitting the vote. But it's a phenomenal year. Emily Blunt for Sicario. We haven't talked about Room because that falls in next year in the UK.
The Mosasaurus.
But that's an incredible performance. The Mosasaurus, I mean, I think we all fell in love with her. Joy in Inside Out.
You're a bit close to the Mosasaurus, bro, in fairness. You haven't got much critical distance. Lily Tomlin in Grandma is fantastic.
Lily Tomlin in Grandma.
She's a big favourite for me.
And it's not really an awardsy kind of performance, but Micah Monroe in It Follows. I thought she's going somewhere, and it's going to be interesting seeing where she goes in the next few years.
It'll also be interesting to see what follows her. Hopefully it's not a sex demon. That would be terrible.
That was a great film, though.
A mention to Catherine Waddston, from Inherent Vice. Who's great and announced herself in by stealing that film, pretty much, even from Joaquin Phoenix.
She stole the film.
She stole it, Chris. She's looking to have it fenced.
I think I said this on the podcast before, but I, you know, the minute I found out that he wanted that PTA and originally wanted Robert Downey Jr. for that role, I just there's something about Joaquin Phoenix. Anyway, let's not get into it. Anyway, Olivia Cooke in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl is a fantastic Mancunian actress, but you wouldn't know it.
No.
From that film. I love that film. For me, it's probably one of the 3 or 4 5-star movies of the year that are on my list, certainly. Whiplash and Mad Max being two of the others. I'm going to do a mea culpa, an apology, public apology, to Thomas Mann, who is the star of Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, because he was also the star of Project X, which is my most loathed movie of the last 20 years. And I did some sort of weird curse around a bubbling cauldron, went, yay, you will never amount to anything, Thomas Mann. But no, he's fantastic in this film. Really, really great. And if you haven't seen it, go and check it out.
Redemption. Project X.
Project X, yeah. Which has,
just
a
writing
sequel,
that down.
Has a sequel next year, Project Double X.
Oh, good God.
They're working up to Triple X, aren't they?
No, they're going to have to skip that and go straight to 4X.
Oh, Australian sequel.
Oh, okay, they're going to have to skip that and go to 5X.
5X.
4X is probably also a trademark.
Bloody hell.
Let me ask a question. Had anyone seen a Rebecca Ferguson film before this year?
No, but I will now make an effort to see all of subsequent Rebecca Ferguson films.
I'm going to find out how many she was in and see what sort of a crazy...
She was in TV shows. She was in The White Queen on the BBC.
Right.
She was in a Swedish soap opera for a few years.
Hold My Meatballs.
I think it was called Lykea. She's probably the breakout of the year for me. Although, you're right, Catherine Waddington as well, who booked Fantastic Beasts and Alien Covenant off the back of an Inherent Vice. But Rebecca Ferguson seems to be, you know, she was just astonishing in that.
Well, to come in and stand up next to Tom Cruise...
Is a
pretty good way to announce yourself to the world. I mean, to absolutely give him a run for his money, I think, on every level, is a pretty great way to announce yourself. So, yeah, I thought she was great.
So it's been a great year for women, but was it a great year for films by people of colour? I mean, I can think of Selma, I thought was fantastic, and I still don't know to this day how David Oyelowo didn't get A, an Oscar nomination, and B, win the bloody thing. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I mean, that and Straight Outta Compton, I think, were the two big... Success is certainly here. Straight Outta Compton, I didn't think I was going to love. I'm not a particularly huge fan of NWA, and I thought it was just brimming with energy and such a timely film, surprisingly, given the sort of political background in the US this year. So that was great. I mean, I think numerically, you're absolutely right that it has been poor in that sense. Creed, I guess, is out in the US again. It's not going to be here until next year, but that's also helpful.
I love that film.
But I think there's also a bunch of really good, maybe less seen films, seen by fewer people, but excellent films. Chris Rock's Top 5 was fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It was Dear White People, which I don't think anyone really saw, but was really great. And Dope, which I just saw a couple of weeks ago. But I mean, these are all very high quality films. And and a lot of them, you know, Dear White People takes racism on head on.
Yeah.
And has some really smart stuff to say about it. So I thought it was a good year in terms of that. I thought there was real progress.
But there's certainly not in terms of, like, for example, the Oscar, like the Oscar nominees this year, there are almost no people of colour. It's going to be a very white list. And with Chris Rock hosting the Oscars, I think he's going to rightly pick up on that.
That's a problem with the awards in general, I think, rather than the films that are coming out. But it's good to see these kind of films coming out.
Also, I think you could maybe extend that to blockbusters as well. I'm struggling to think of really great roles for people of colour in Mad Max, Mission Impossible,
just Roman Pierce,
Avengers. The Fast movies are fantastic in that respect, definitely.
Yeah, and in many other respects.
And in many other respects as well.
In defying the laws of physics.
But you're getting blockbusters as well where race is becoming less of a deal. Like Focus came out and it's Will Smith and Margot Robbie are a couple and it's not commented upon. And, you know, I think that's not something that's always been true.
That's absolutely right. It was a very big deal when he made Hitch that he was playing against Eva Mendes as a light-coloured woman, because that was a sort of seen as a taboo in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we're getting past that stage, but I think we've certainly got a long way to go.
Absolutely. And speaking of Focus, I know Nick has one of your favourite scenes of the year. It's a film that most people think would overlook, and you know, it's a fun, frothy confection. There's not a lot of substance to it, but you absolutely love it. It's a sequence you adore, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a pretty average film, but there's a scene at an American football game with B.D. Wong,
your castmate,
my my fellow star. Yeah, it involves a Rolling Stones song, and it's very clever.
What about other favourite sequences of the year? What really tickled your fancy? We all know I love the church scene in Kingsman. I'll mention it again. We haven't even mentioned really Star Wars any of this stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot to say. I mean, Avengers, the party scene, apart from anything else, I've always said that I would watch the Avengers sit around a table and talk for 2 hours and have that be the third film. And that was as close as I'm probably going to get, you know, 5 minutes at the beginning. But I absolutely loved that. I would say as well something like The Martian, the Council of Elrond scene was pretty magic.
Yeah, that was great.
But honestly, I adored that entire film. I just thought it was... I love films about a group of clever people trying to do a good thing. I think that kind of man on a mission movie is absolutely up my street. And so The Martian was one of my films of the year as a result of that, because I just thought it was so charming and so clever.
How many am I allowed to pick from The Water Diviner?
None.
I think all of them.
No, go on, pick one.
No. There is nothing.
There's not.
Sorry, Ross.
No, it's not a terrible film. It's
okay.
Just not quite.
It's all right. I can't remember anything specific. But the traffic jam in Sicario could be my number one. It's the music. It's got this throbbing kind of heartbeat, doomy bass. And I did see this film in the loudest screening I think I've ever been to. I think my teeth are still rattling. But that's an astonishing action sequence. Wish it had been a bit longer, to be honest. I'm going to say something in defense of Chappie. I thought the battle at the end with the moose was good. I thought that was
We should point out the moose is like a massive exoskeleton suit, not an actual Canadian animal.
Although that would actually be a really good scene. I've never seen a robot fight a moose.
Chappie improved film.
It's essentially Hugh Jackman with a mullet sitting in a chair controlling a giant robo thing. And I liked elements of that film, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Do you know what else I'd say is Steve Jobs? I thought the confrontations with Wozniak were absolutely terrific. I don't know when this happened, but somehow Seth Rogen became my favourite thing in that film. And I thought their confrontations, better than any other scenes in the film, I thought really, really worked for me.
Mm. Well, it's a big spoiler, but the end of Slow West I thought was fantastic. The whole film was a real a lovely surprise. I don't think anyone saw that coming. John McClane, previously the Beta Band, and it was his first film. He'd done short films before, and that one was absolutely joyous. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised to hear me name-checking Roy Anderson at this point in the podcast.
Oh, no, but A Pigeon Sat on a Branch Reflecting on Existence was amazing.
There was a bit where the pigeon was on a branch,
strangely, yeah. But my favourite moment in it, which is an incredibly out of context from the rest of the film and surreal is when, I'm embarrassing, I can't remember which one, but a Swedish monarch on his way to a battle, and bear in mind this is set in contemporary Sweden, marches his army past a cafe when to no one's sort of obvious shock, he kind of brings his horse in and asks to use the loo. He sends one of his footmen to find out if the loo's available and reports back that unfortunately it's occupied. And so he has to wait. It's just so incredibly off the wall and surreal. Yeah. It's
I believe that was Carl the 12th.
Wow, know that?
Good. I've just looked it up.
Okay. Oh, you shouldn't have given it away.
I'm so sorry. I was extraordinarily sceptical of that film because unlike you, Phil, I'm not a hardcore art house fan, but it was hilarious.
Yes.
And moving and really, really good.
I'm not a hardcore fan of Roy Anderson's work in general, but I really like that one, especially that moment.
Oh, the opening of Wild Tales, the very first, the kind of the prologue to the film. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
I don't want to say much more about it, but it's set on a plane.
That is a film that was very unlucky not to make our top 20 of the year. A lot of our writers voted for it, and it's well worth tracking down.
A film that surprised me actually in our top 20 of the year, I really liked it and I'm glad it's on there, was A Most Violent Year. I had a couple of great scenes in it, I think, for me. Jessica Chastain, we have talked about her.
Yeah.
What an amazing year for her as well. Just great. But there's an amazing sequence where there's a foot chase, which is a great foot chase. But I love the sequence where Oscar Isaac goes in to meet the people responsible for his troubles and doesn't threaten them. He just asks them to stop.
Yes.
I love that scene. And it's also the year of Oscar Isaac, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac, Jessica Chastain, Alicia Vikander in all the movies, please, forevermore.
And Donald Gleeson.
And
also
Donald Gleeson.
Four
and
films, I think, this year. Basically, everyone who was in Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Plus
Micah Monroe.
There you go.
And Chappie.
Yeah. Chappie in top 20 of the year? No, Chappie.
No.
What did Dan Stevens do this year?
Then
he rested.
He made Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
He chiseled those abs.
Okay.
And he got ready to come back as our spirit animal next year.
He's still our spirit animal, though, is he? He hasn't been replaced by Mike
we
Monroe.
Would never.
Although Oscar Isaac is pretty close to, I think, replacing him. It's the thing, Stevens. You snooze, you lose.
I have another scene I wanted to mention. Can I do that? It's a film I loved. Again, I'm putting myself in the ghetto. Force Majeure. Shut up.
No, I'm not kidding. It's fine.
Force Majeure is a really, really, really good movie. And it's basically premised around a family going away to the Alps for a holiday and there being an avalanche. Unbeknownst to them, a controlled avalanche. The husband panics and he runs away, Brave Sir Robin style, in the middle of leaving his wife and two young kids basically to fend for themselves. And the snow shrouds the screen as it kind of envelops them. And then he creeps back from the right of the frame and sits down again as if nothing's happened. And then the film picks up from there and shows the kind of fallout from that. But that one.
Has there been an avalanche in a Fast and Furious movie yet?
It's coming.
It feels like it should be.
They're in New York next. It's got to happen.
New
York has lots of snow just waiting around.
So much. One we haven't mentioned yet, which is actually in our top 20 of the year, is Song of the Sea, which had one of my favourite sequences because the end of that movie, I think, is incredibly powerful. Now, this is from Cartoon Saloon, who are this tiny Irish animation house. Well, less and less tiny, I guess, because they have now had two features. I think they've only made two features and they've both been Oscar nominated. So they are right up there with the big daddies. They're right up there with Pixar, with DreamWorks.
With Chris Meledandri.
And you know, they're doing fantastically well and they are telling their own personal, very Irish, very beautiful stories, and it's absolutely brilliant to see.
Of course.
To see that, because I think we get used to talking about the big daddies, and it's good to see someone else really making an impact like this.
Agreed.
And really coming through.
Of course, back home we call it onimation, with a.
We don't.
Oh,
no.
What
we
about
call it mechanimation?
What about Rogue Nation?
What about Rogue
and
Nation?
And the Opera House scene in Rogue Nation in particular.
Yes, I will accept that.
Is that okay?
I will accept that. I will also accept something I'm going to put forward.
Okay, you're going to accept the thing that you're suggesting?
Yes.
That's big of
it's
you.
It's how it works, Phil.
Okay, what is it?
I'll have to explain this beforehand. The 20-minute, absolutely bonkers Azerbaijan bus chase sequence in Fast 7.
Oh, God, yes.
Which is just utterly demented and ends with that great shot of Paul Walker running up the car and trying to jump off the cliff. And then it ends with Vin Diesel.
Yeah, he just drives off the
mountain. He just drives off the cliff like, what are you doing?
I preferred the the car going from one skyscraper to another.
That was astonishing.
And then another one. It was the second one that just killed me, because it's like, that's not enough. That's not enough. You've got to do it again.
I liked it when The Rock flexed and the cast on his arm shattered, and then he drove a truck into a drone.
He kicked a drone, in my memory. That probably didn't happen.
Picked up a minigun and shot down a helicopter.
He ate the drone and everything on it.
The Rock.
Let me ask you a question. What films this year made you cry, and why?
I mean, virtually all the ones
Inside Out,
so
because I have issues. Unresolved.
Also, you were in the rarefied air of a plane.
I was in a plane which never kind of helped. Star Wars made me cry. I watched Star Wars,
last night, and
I can't say what made me cry, but actually I've seen it twice, and I cried both times.
Star Wars for me as well, definitely. Inside Out for me as well. The Martian, but it was more tears of joy, frankly. I cry at a lot of films, but it was...
Did you cry when John Wick's puppy...
Oh, goodness, the puppy!
Did anyone weep with Anthony the Ant in Ant-Man?
I didn't weep. I wailed.
You rent your clothes and
Dwayne. Yeah, I tore. I've got
there was gnashing of teeth. It's got biblical.
I've got through more T-shirts watching the film. I'm not a huge crier in films.
You're very repressed. You're very buttoned up. And
I cry the minute this podcast finishes. But Me and Earl and the Dying Girl destroyed me, part because I've got experience in that area. But I think... Honestly, and this may sound really strange, but the farewell to Paul Walker sequence at the end of Fast 7, and I know it's a big dumb blockbuster, but there was something really poignant about that scene towards the end, which ripped me apart. And there's a sequence in Selma which just rent me asunder, where a young black guy has been killed by white cops in Selma, and his dad, his elderly dad, is just gobsmacked and doesn't quite understand what's happened and doesn't understand why it's happened. And Martin Luther King has to try and explain to him why your son has been killed. And it just absolutely... Oh, my God. It just, yeah.
Things involving parents and children tend to absolutely slay me, to be honest.
And yet Inside Out left me completely dry as a bone.
That is because you have no soul. Brooklyn, I also find pretty emotional just because it is extraordinarily good in conveying what it is to be Irish.
Amy was pretty upsetting, especially when it gets into the second half and you get into the decline and just you want someone to help her and step in. And it's quite upsetting. It's really well done.
Yeah. And Beyond the Lights actually also has some great moments, very, very emotional moments. Great, great performances in that as well.
I was in tears several times during Terminator Genesis. and I have to say, when I realised that we wouldn't see Edmund again, Jurassic World takes on a really bittersweet towards the end.
We don't know Chris that.
Edmund will always be right here.
In here.
You don't want to know what I'm pointing at.
Oh my God, your finger just lit up and glowed.
Edmund has to go home now.
I don't remember weeping in any films, but certainly there was a tear welling in my eye when I just witnessed my brother sitting through the entire end credits of Jurassic World until the lights came up and people started sweeping around him, still waiting for his name to appear. But that turned out to be an error.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible.
It's there.
It was a tear of pride.
We just missed it.
No, we didn't miss it.
I have a credit on the only film, because I worked between university and starting at Empire, I worked briefly as a kind of runner and then as a post-production assistant on a few films, and I have my name in the credits of one film. That film is Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life.
Could you not take your name off it? What's going on?
There we go.
So Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, is that the one with Daniel Craig or was that the other one?
It's Jared Butler.
It was Jared Butler.
Jared Butler.
You're the only sibling I have to reach through IMDb Pro these days.
I told Jared Butler that once when I interviewed him. I told him my name was in the credits for that. Oh, you unlucky butter. He didn't have a good time on it either.
Anyway. Oh, bless him. Right, so... Hidden gems.
Hidden gems.
Hidden gems.
Well, I'd mention Song of the Sea again.
Yeah.
Because I'm always going to.
Films that nobody else saw that you really want to champion.
I have a few.
There were some really good documentaries this year that are worth mentioning. Obviously, Amy wasn't a hidden gem because it was a massive hit and people loved it. But Palio was very good about the horse race in Siena. Mm-hmm. And I really liked a film about the Russian Soviet ice hockey team called Red Army, which I enjoyed very much. Which is worth tracking down.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to shout out to The Tale Apprentice Kaguya, which is the Studio Ghibli film, and it is astonishing. It's sort of animated in the style of classical Japanese art, like classical watercolors, mm-hmm. and you've never seen anything like it, and it's a sort of an old Japanese legend. It's beautiful.
I want to give a shout out to Housebound, which is a Kiwi horror comedy, which is just demented, and Peter Jackson loves it, and you can kind of see why, because it's reminds you of his early stuff. It's not as gory as his early stuff, but it's got that same kind of mad flavour to it.
Chappie gets shout out?
No, Chappie.
Chappie doesn't get a shout out.
How about also The Voices, which I don't think a lot of people
know. You and I disagree on this.
I know. I think it's, I mean, listen, I think it's weird and strange and unnatural and wrong in many ways, but it's kind of fascinating. I think it's worth watching.
I didn't like The Voices at all, I have to say.
No, I had problems with it. I admired that it was trying to do what it was doing and that it was went as far as it did, because it does go very far, but it wasn't for me necessarily.
Phil Kant.
Xavier Dolan, who's 7, directed Mummy, which is, I think it's his 5th feature film, and another cracker, really punchy and visceral. It's got a soundtrack that would appeal to people into the Britpop scene, bizarrely, about a troubled child and his mum and a friend. It's shot in a really unusual, what I'd call like the play school square window format, basically a 1-1 ratio, which I've never seen before. I'm not sure it's even been done before, but that was a cracking film, I thought. It Follows was the real kind of early surprise that came from nowhere, but we've sort of talked about that. I don't even know if that classifies as a underseen.
I think so. I've got a couple. I really liked, in terms of comedies as well, I really liked Bill, which was the Horrible Histories, Yonderland Teams, Shakespeare comedy, which is a lot of great puns and a lot of stuff going for it. It's got a lovely family vibe, and that's a good one to seek out. Not in the Paddington class, but it's good family fun. But I really loved Super Bob, which is a very low budget, I mean, really micro budget, low British film comedy about a British superhero. And I know how that sounds, but the film itself is sweet and authentic and adorable and romantic, and overcomes its budgetary limitations. It basically follows the superhero on his day off in a sort of documentary style, although that quickly goes away. And I thought it really promising for the director John Drever and its star and co-writer Brett Goldstein. I really thought it's fantastic. And it's got one of my moments of the year as well. It's sort of gorgeous sequence in an old people's home, of all places. But it's really great. If you haven't seen that, go and check it out.
You were a fan of Creep, weren't you, bro?
Oh yeah, Creep is very good. I caught that on Netflix recently. That is another horror movie with Mark Duplass as a very twisted individual who has an alter ego, Peach Fuzz. I won't say anything else, but it's pretty twisted. And two more shout outs. One of them is another kind of horror thriller, which is The Gift, which Joel Edgerton both directed and starred in, which has maybe got the darkest twist in a film I've seen this year.
I don't
want to say anything else, but I really enjoyed that. I saw that on a plane recently. And also The Overnight. Which, I don't know. Is it a spoiler to say that there is a gigantic penis in it?
No.
Yeah, it has a gigantic penis in it. A
lot of penises in films this year. It's been a really great year for penises.
Was it?
Yeah. So there's a big floppy one in Vince Vaughn's Unfinished Business, which is meant to belong to Nick Frost. And then isn't there one in Get Hard? Well, Will Ferrell is trying, because he has to...
Why are you looking at me? I don't have any idea.
You have
memories.
The ledger.
I do. You're right, hang on.
You are the keeper of the penis ledger.
Let me just check. Yes.
But yeah, so well done, penises. It's been a banner year for you, a real standout year for penises. But yeah. Well
we
done.
Watched The Overnight together. You, me, and Ali Plum, mm-hmm. Helen, yep. Sat down in a row, and it was the most excruciating of my life. It was just horrifically awkward in that particular moment with Adam Scott. Which you have to see to believe.
Well, the setup is that there's a couple, a regular couple, and they befriend another couple who invite them around to their house and become increasingly flirtatious, and it becomes apparent they want to have sex with them, and so it unravels over that night, and it's just it's pretty funny.
I love Adam Scott.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic.
It is a really really funny film.
Got one more, Eden, Eden, a film about it's a sad, really quite melancholy movie about a French house DJ and the passing of time, basically. It's a film about the passing of time, but with awesome music.
And of course, we're talking about hidden gems. Terminator Gent, no. So let's talk very, very quickly about a couple of things. Soundtracks, best soundtrack of the year, or favorite track of the year. Is there a track that you have just never left, has never left your iPod since you've heard it? iPod, my like favorite, in 1993.
My favorite use of music was probably in The Martian, just because it's so wittily on the nose. Like at one, you know, he's going to drive to his kind of last chance to escape Mars, and he's playing Waterloo because it's the big deal. You know, when he brings back the radioactive isotope that's going to help him power everything he needs to power, they play Hot Stuff. It's just hilarious, the music. Having said that, I'm not that big a disco fan, so I haven't exactly been listening to it on repeat. I just think it's great use of music in context.
I'm still mystified by the fact that they went with Spaceman by David Bowie and not Life on Mars. I know that would be even more on the nose, but... Yeah. Come on, if you're going to go that way, you do Life on Mars.
Also,
even Robert Zemeckis would go, that's a bit on the
But, I mean, spoiler, over the end credits, they play I Will Survive. It's just brilliant. Wow. So good.
Yeah. I got a few. I really like the actual score for The Martian as well.
Yeah.
Alongside the disco stuff by Harry Gregson-Williams. Jed Kurzel, who is Justin Kurzel's brother, his score for Macbeth, probably not one for, like, Christmas carols time, jarring and a bit discordant, but really perfect for the film.
I love jarring and discordant.
Jeff Barrow from Portishead and Ben Salisbury, who I believe did the Dread score, did Ex Machina, which is another cracker.
Duke of Burgundy. Was that Cat's Eyes?
Cat's Eyes, yeah. The dude from The Horrors, Fadwan. Fadwan? Faris Badwan.
Amazing. That's the first time we've mentioned Duke of Burgundy on the podcast. I love the track I think I played more than any this year. I love Solomon Lane from Joe Kramer's Mission Impossible score. But I played the opening track, the A400, I think, more than anything else this year. Because Mission Impossible starts with about 87 different production company credits at the beginning. And so to relieve the tedium during that part, Joe Kramer builds the Mission Impossible theme. But really well. It's just absolutely, I love the way he does that. So I've listened to that bit lots.
It is a good score.
Very good score.
Well, San Andreas, track 5. Quite coming. No, I have not got that score.
Also, I was listening to Star Wars The Force Awakens, and I sat through the credits the first time I watched it because I wanted to make sure there wasn't a sting at the end. I was reviewing it after all for Empire, and I had to make sure. And I was just sitting there thinking, this John Williams fella. He's a bit good, isn't he?
He's going places.
I mean, now I know that James was complaining that there's no knockout sort of duel of the fates piece in this movie, but I think there are cues there. There are sort of riffs on existing themes that he's done. There are kind of developments of existing themes that he's done that I think are absolutely beautiful.
The score over the last 5 minutes of the film in particular,
yeah.
I think is absolutely beautiful. I think the score that I've noticed the most while watching a film was Sicario, partly because it was so loud, but also I just thought they did a genius job of just very minimal, very bassy, very doomy, and kind of just the whole film. It adds so much to that film. I can't imagine it with a different score.
Same goes for Mad Max Fury Road. Tom Hulkenberg, Junkie XL.
Hulkenberg Smash.
Yeah, Hulkenberg Smash, exactly.
It is good. And a soundtrack I've never been able to put on in the office more than 2 minutes before someone tells me to turn it off, Whiplash.
That's because you're playing at the wrong speed.
Was he dragging or was he rushing? Oh.
The 9.5 minute caravan at the end of the film is a fantastic, fantastic track. And if you're a fan of drum solos, and who isn't, as a man who has occasionally spent time on YouTube just watching drum solos, It's great. Fantastic. So let's talk very, very quickly. Let's not be too self-aggrandizing about it, but our experiences of the year. I mean, was there something that stood out? Someone you met, a set you were on, something you did? Helen is looking at me incredibly smugly right now. What was it?
I was on set. Can I say what I was on set of? I probably can. Can I?
Did it rhyme with Shapton Shamariga Shmirov Shmore?
It might have done.
Well, then that came from my mouth, not yours. I think you have successfully passed the NDA, top lawyer Helen O'Hara.
If I had been on such a set, that would have been one of the great days.
All right, good, good. Phil Catt?
Going to Comic-Con.
This is amazing. I wish I'd been following you with a camera.
Comic-Con. I really loved it. I had a great time. really great time. I have such happy memories.
I just have this image of you being like Marcus in Indiana Jones. And
you did that with Damon, like, didn't you? Damon Wise, when he went to Comic-Con, it was all like, yeah. Marcus Brody. Yeah.
Were you dressed up as a Criterion Collection Goddard?
I cosplayed as Death from...
Seventh Seal.
From the Seventh Seal, but... People thought I was from Wayne's World 2, so that kind of worked. But no.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, what did I say? Wayne's World 2. Sorry, it's been a long year.
Not excellent. Phil and I sat in this very room with Alan freaking Rickman, and if that is not the best thing that happened to me this year, then I don't know what is, because that was amazing. We got to annoy him slightly with questions about Die Hard. and then I had a kind of an Independence Day experience, because I went out to Los Angeles and I saw Jeff Goldblum playing jazz, not for work, just for fun. And yes. I got to hug him afterwards. He's the greatest. He was there. He was reading out people's Instagram. he was reading out Instagram comments that people had left under his posts. And then he was also reading out anything that people gave him to read. So he's reading out text messages. Someone had a book in their bag, so he read a page. He was trying to link actors to himself. He was trying to do that 5 degrees thing. And then afterwards, he was like, I'm just going to stand in the middle of the room. Come and meet me. And, you know, he was so cool. And then the next morning, I interviewed Will Smith. So... I was gonna talk to Randy Quaid as well to make it a trio, but I was too frightened.
That's right. Awesome.
I too met Goldblum this year. It was amazing. He complimented me on my jacket. He felt the sleeve, went, that's a nice jacket. And that was great. I had my picture taken with him, which is really unprofessional, but it's Jeff bloody Goldblum, for the love of God. The Chris McQuarrie spoiler special was amazing. And I too was on set of a superhero film that I probably cannot name. And that was an interesting experience. But look out for the coverage of that next year in Empire Magazine when a certain film hits.
Oh, I got to put my hand in some slime as well. Some actual Ghostbusters slime.
Keep your
slime.
Sex life stuff out of it. We don't need that. It's a family show.
It's really sticky.
it's been a cracking year, but has it also been a cracking year for terrible films?
Yes. It's been so good for bad films.
Yeah, what a bit of a
It puts a skip of joy in my heart. how bad some of the films were that we had to sit through.
I like dogs. I've always loved dogs.
Oh, my word. Jupiter Ascending.
That was amazing.
Jupiter Descending.
I'm going to defend Jupiter Ascending a little bit.
Don't.
Really?
Don't. Yeah. Don't.
I mean, it was hilarious, though, in its badness. Like, I really enjoyed its badness.
But it wasn't Pan levels of badness, which was just that scene. Oh, so many scenes in Pan. But
Pan, yeah. I think Pan, I mean, Pan, they had some really beautiful designs. Like, every time I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so done with this film, something really beautiful would happen. I'd be like, oh, that's really pretty. And I'd be kind of back on board for like 2 minutes and then I'd get bored again.
I think both Jupiter Ascending and Pan are examples of really interesting directors having a go at it and missing by a mile. But at least they had a go at it.
At least they had a go. Yeah.
Whereas something like Terminator Genesis, which is the worst kind of studio mandated, written by committee crap. Just that annoyed me.
I think it's the first time I booed a post-credit sting. It was just such... It was just like...
Remind me again of the post-credit sting.
Oh, it's essentially just the Skynet booting back up again. And you just thanks for wasting 2 hours of my life. Like, you know.
That was
there was no imagination or invention. It was just like... It was basically they might as well have put a sign up going, we're making another one of these, deal with it.
I feel we're ending on a downer.
I do feel like the studios are maybe trying a little bit too hard to create these franchises and create these extended universes without first creating a film that makes us want to learn more. So there's an element in some films of that, Terminator Genesis being the worst one.
You're making a film just because you can.
Just because you have the rights at the moment, yeah.
And Fantastic Four, I think, was obviously another example of that. You know, hey, we've got some IP.
Yeah, the Sony hag opened up quite a lot of cans of worm-shaped things, and it showed how, you know, there was a few interesting films this year in the sense that they had really talented people attached to them and, you know, good casts and such like. I mean, Aloha, in the case of the Sony hack, that was a film that you know, it's a Cameron Crowe movie, had a really good cast, some unusual casting decisions, but you could see when the emails leaked, not that we read them, but, you know, that there was a problem emerging, and the film that arrived was sort of, it was DOA, really, and the same applied to Peter Bogdanovich's Return. Funny that way. It was not funny and not one that you'd necessarily want to go out of your way to watch on DVD. And Accidental Love, which was another that started off
as
David O. Russell film and ended up with an Adam Smithy and being genuinely terrible, terrible.
Yeah, well, that's a unique one because that the money ran out while they were filming. And then
someone else bought it and just hacked it together with sellotape and
without David Russell say so,
Blue Peter style, and then released it without a say so and had his name removed. But yeah, those were three real clunkers.
I don't think that Fantastic Four was genuinely terrible. I just thought it was dull.
I think it was pretty terrible.
But it was there were terrible elements as well. But it was really dull, and I just I think that it's infamous because of the Josh Trank meltdown and the tweet. But otherwise, I think it's just one of those movies that should really pass unremarked. It kiboshed a franchise before it even got off the ground. But otherwise, I don't think it was.
I think there were a few films. That was one of the films this year that was a prequel to itself. I mean, again, like Man from U.N.C.L.E. Although I would take Man from U.N.C.L.E. over Fantastic Four any day of the week.
Yeah, same here.
But those two and Terminator, they were all putting the franchise ahead of the film. And I think you can't really do that and survive. But there were so many good films as well.
There were so many great films. So we're going to finish off. I'm going to run down our top 20 of the year. Okay? And I just want yays and nays from you guys. And if you disagree vehemently, then let me know. All right?
All right.
Here we go. 20. Jurassic World. Jurassic World.
Nah.
Yes. See, Helen's meh. Nick is...
For me...
he's in the Mosasaur tank.
I'm not going to promote myself again. But for me, the last 20 minutes, I think, elevated it. Because for me, that was the most satisfying third act of any of the blockbusters. It just was exactly what I wanted to see from a Jurassic World movie. And
okay.
I loved it. And the scene with Chris Pratt riding the motorcycle with the raptors all around him with that music was maybe my favourite moment in the cinema. I loved it.
Wow, wow, wow.
But I'm a big Jurassic Park geek.
You're a massive Jurassic Park nerd. I will say very, very briefly, I don't understand still to this day the hatred for that film.
I've explained it to you at length.
But there are people out there who said, you know, worst film of the year. Worst sequel ever made. That level of hatred.
Okay, that's crazy.
Don't get that. 19, Song of the Sea.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yes.
18, one I disagree with, Inherent Vice.
Yes.
No,
two strong yeses.
No.
Okay. We get the casting vote.
No.
So
no, no,
that's been taken out. 17, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Very good film. 16, Macbeth, the Scottish film.
Yes.
I didn't like it.
I think I have
a problem with Macbeth in general. I don't like him.
He's a bit of a nasty, isn't he?
He's a...
come on. Pull your act together, you
stabby.
Big...
15, Avengers, Age of Ultron.
Yes.
No.
With a few reservations, yes.
I really liked it. I really did.
Too long. Way too long.
You're too long.
Yeah. You've got too many characters. You've got an unsatisfactory third act. Mm. 14, White God.
Now, this is a surprising one because we should explain that every Empire writer cast votes and so
yes.
It's all collated and stuff. But yeah, no, I didn't realize this many, but I wouldn't have thought this many people would have seen it. But.
Yes, every Empire writer, including freelancers, is asked to submit their top 10 of the year and then a weighting system is given to it. So your number one film of the year is given 10 points, your number 10 film of the year is given 1 point, and so on. Then they are collated and tallied up, and then we have the top 10.
And then 10. I throw that list away and I put all the foreign films at the
yeah,
top.
Basically. 13, Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Decent.
Liked it, didn't love it.
Oh, you. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, 12.
Yeah. Pretty, yep.
You love it enough for all of us, Chris.
I do, actually. 11, Birdman.
Enjoyed. Mm. I'm not without reservation, but I did enjoy it.
I need to see it again. It gave me a bit of a headache at the time.
I'm not a fan. In the Battle of the Films with the jazzy drum soundtrack, I think that comes out a very distant second for me.
Fair enough.
10, A Most Violent Year, which I'm surprised it's so high on the list.
Me too,
it's
me too.
Good
but
film.
Yes, very good.
Number 9, Carol.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep.
And number 8, It Follows.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Number 7, The Martian.
Hell yeah.
Mm. Where?
6,
yes.
The film that should have been called The King of France, Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprised by how good that was.
Number 5, Sick a Rio.
Yes.
Wait, this was the year Steve Jobs came out. Suddenly dawned on me. Can we do the whole podcast again?
Yeah,
it's the best year ever.
We'll upgrade the podcast.
Really good, yeah. Steve Jobs. Great script.
Number 4, Ex Machina.
Yes.
Mm.
3, Inside Out.
Hell yes.
I want to say with Ex Machina, that Ex Machina and Mad Max Fury Road, that may or may not be in this list, were probably the two films that most filmmakers love.
Yeah.
When you talk to them about what they've seen, those are the ones that keep coming up.
2, Whiplash.
Yeah.
One, Mad Max Fury Road.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. I will say very, very briefly, this poll was taken before Star Wars The Force Awakens came out, which is why it's not in our top 20 of the year. But I'm going to ask just now, the four of us, would it be in your top 10 of the year? Helen?
Yeah, I think so.
Where?
Lower half, probably, because I don't see, you know, my Inside Outs and my Martians moving too much. And obviously Furious 7 is in there as well for me. It is.
Okay.
I'm not going to apologise for that again.
I have all four Marvel movies this year on my list, and we're only two produced this year, so that's how much I'm in the tank for them. Phil?
Top 20.
Top 20?
Yes.
Okay. Nick?
Yeah, it might just about squeeze into the top 10. I had some issues with it, but I love the beginning and the end. Got some issues with the middle.
Okay. It wouldn't be in my top 10. But there you go. All right. That is it. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us. That is it for our Review of the Year special. Join us every Friday, of course. We're back in January 8th with the regular podcast, and then every Friday thereafter we will have spoiler specials and special interviews, hopefully all the way through 2016. Join us next year, this time next year, for a 2016 Review of the Year special.
Oh, I just think maybe we should... Just a big thank you to everyone for listening.
Yeah.
We love the listeners. Merry Christmas.
We do. I think this is out after Christmas.
Merry Christmas next year. Merry Easter.
Have a happy new year. It's goodbye from Helen.
Happy New Year.
From Phil.
Merry Christmas.
Oh my God, you're late.
Oh God, I've done it again. Goodbye.
Have an excellent Yom Kippur.
That was Nick. And it's goodbye from me. As ever, thank you so much for listening. We literally couldn't do this without you guys tuning in your dozens. Really shot up this year, the Fury figures. Really happy with it.
Yeah, wow.
I know them all personally now. It's great. But no, seriously, guys, it's always a pleasure doing this podcast. And thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next year. Bye-bye.